Okay. Good morning. We're pleased to be with Dave Jamison, Executive Director of the Iowa Finance Authority, and Sergeant Byron Jimerson, a fellow military police veteran who lives in Osceola, Iowa. Iowa military members and veterans have an important homeownership resource available to them through the Iowa Finance Authority. The Military Home Ownership Assistance Program provides eligible service members and veterans a grant of $5,000. That grant may be used towards down payment or closing costs to purchase a home located in Iowa. The program is jointly administered by the Iowa Finance Authority and the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs and has assisted over 3,400 Iowa service members in purchasing a home since the program's inception. The Home Base Iowa initiative already is showing significant results. More than 800 veterans have been matched with jobs, and we're positioned to assist thousands more. A key component in the transition to civilian life for these veterans is making their own permanent home base right here in Iowa. The Military Home Ownership Assistance Program will help them to achieve that goal. The Home Base Iowa Act expanded the Military Home Ownership Assistance Program, allowing it to serve even more deserving veterans. These enhancements included funding the program was increased from $1.6 million to $2.5 million for fiscal year 2015. And eligibility for the grant has been expanded to include service members who served during the first war in the Gulf that served 90 days of active duty between August 2, 1990 and April 6, 1991. Previously, the grant was only available to those who had served on qualified service after September 1 of 2001. I thank all the service members and veterans for their service. I encourage Iowa veterans to inquire about the Military Home Ownership Assistance Program as an option to assist them in purchasing a home in Iowa. And now I'm pleased to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. U.S. service members have bravely distinguished themselves through courage and combat and commitment to our country. And in Iowa, we recognize their sacrifice and dedication in several ways. One specific way is through the Military Home Ownership Assistance Program. The Military Home Ownership Assistance Program was created by the Iowa Legislature in 2005 to foster affordable home ownership opportunities for our service members. Iowa was the first state in the nation to create a program to help military service members purchase a home. Now more than ever, more service members are eligible for the program because of the Iowa's Home-Based Iowa Act. The program grant sometimes is the difference between purchasing a home now or waiting to save up for the expense of a down payment later. In fiscal year 2014, the program assisted 423 military service members and their families to fulfill their dreams of home ownership. So I encourage every Iowan to share information about this program with a veteran so we can welcome them home, not only to Iowa, but to home ownership in Iowa as well. And at this time, I'd like to invite the Iowa Finance Director, Executive Director Dave Jamison, to the podium. Dave?
Good morning. Well, thank you, Governor and Lieutenant Governor, for giving this opportunity to talk about this important program, which is part of our larger mission at the Iowa Finance Authority of helping people buy homes. The Iowa Finance Authority staff and Board of Directors are very proud of our record. Over the past 40 years, we've helped nearly 45,000 Iowans find a place they can call home. And it's truly an honor to administer the Military Home Ownership Assistance Program in partnership with the Iowa Department of Veteran Affairs. This program, as you've heard, offers $5,000 grants towards the purchase of a home for eligible veterans. To be eligible, the service member or veteran must meet one of the following three conditions. They must have served 90 days active duty between August 2, 1990 and April 6, 1991, or between September 11, 2001 and the present. This active duty does not need to be consecutive. It can be cumulative. Or they must be a federal status injured service person having served between those dates, or be a surviving spouse of an eligible service person. In all cases, the discharge needs to be other than dishonorable. To receive the grant, eligible applicants must receive approval from the Iowa Finance Authority prior to the closing on the qualified home. They need to utilize an Iowa Finance Authority participating and facilitating lender or facilitating lender. And there's over 400 of those around the state of Iowa. A list of participating lenders and the full eligibility criteria are available at iowafinanceauthority.gov. Funding for this program is subject to annual state appropriations, and funds are made available on a first-come, first-served basis. When combined with the Iowa Finance Authority's other down payment assistance programs, which have a $2,500 grant available, an eligible service member could receive up to $7,500 grant funds towards the purchase of a home. However, it should be noted that the $2,500 down payment assistance program through the Finance Authority does have, unlike the military homeownership assistance program, does have restrictions on income and purchase price of the home. The Iowa Finance Authority offers mortgage financing for both first-time and repeat home buyers with household income limits as high as $111,300 annual income, and the purchase price limits up to $305,000. I encourage any Iowan, and veterans in particular, who are in the market for a new home to ask their lender about the Iowa Finance Authority's mortgage products or check our website at iowafinanceauthority.gov. The Iowa Finance Authority is not a direct lender. We are able to offer our programs through a network of more than 400 outstanding lending partners across the state. This is a successful public-private partnership and allows us to offer unique programming and give Iowans the convenience of dealing with their local lenders. We're honored to offer these programs to Iowa military service members and veterans and all Iowa home buyers on behalf of the state of Iowa. And in particular, I want to thank the governor and the legislature as they've increased funding recently on this program. It's in high demand. So thank you very much. And with that, it's my honor and pleasure to introduce to you Byron Jimerson, a veteran who has been able to use the Military Homeownership Assistance Program. Byron.
Good morning. Sorry, I got a bit of a cold today, but my name is Byron Jimerson. I'm, as the governor said, a former military police veteran from the Iowa Army National Guard. They asked me to come today to share because I'm a recent recipient of the grant. Me and my wife, Nicole, were able to purchase a home in Osceola and close in October of last year. We were able to find a very nice home and get the payments very reasonable with the assistance of the grant. Bill Walsh at Great Western Bank in Altoona was extremely helpful in getting that grant. He made it extremely painless. Sign your signature a few times. He prepares everything, and it's very easy to get the program if you meet the criteria. I would encourage anybody that's an eligible veteran that's looking to purchase their home to check into this program because it's very helpful and very easy to use. Byron Jimerson. We were able to get a $5,000 grant. It was 9,400 or 1,000. Excuse me.
94?
Yes. We did not have to use any saved up money because of the grant. It made it much, much easier to be able to do it. As first home buyers realize that there are other expenses that come along, like a new garage door and et cetera, that come along shortly after buying a new house. So using the savings to do those things made it much easier. I actually work here in Des Moines at Merle Hay Mall. I do commute, yeah. The reason we stay in Osceola is I am on the volunteer fire department, and I'm also a reserve sheriff's deputy for the county, so wanted to stay local so I could continue to do those things.
How much of a difference?
The time frame was accelerated because we are expecting a baby girl in next month, so we had to move a little quicker on finding a home than we'd originally planned. So without the grant, it would have been far more difficult to be able to complete that. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Byron.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Governor, did you ask for more money for this program or status
quo? For the next 2 years, we've asked for the $2.5 million. We increased it in this fiscal year from 1.6 to 2.5. It appears that that's going to, and if we get to, say, May or June, and we don't have, you know, we at that point run out of money, then they can push it into the next year, another month or two. So we'll see how that goes to see. I'm very supportive of this program, and if demand continues to grow, as we did last year, we did increase from 1.6 to 2.5. But in the biennial budget we presented, we have 2.5 for each of the next 2 years.
Governor,
yeah.
I just want to ask about Florinda and Mount Pleasant. You may be aware, Senator Rich Taylor told people at a meeting down there over the weekend that Iowa law requires under Iowa code, the state is required to operate mental health institutes at four places, including Florinda and Mount Pleasant. What's your, is that right?
Well, what we're not closing the facilities. What we're recommending is, first of all, neither one of them are accredited. Clorinda, the psychiatrist, is about ready to retire, and Mount Pleasant has not been able to attract a psychiatrist. So to be able to provide quality mental health services to people, we think they can better be served at the other two institutes and community mental health, and with the help of the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. Well, it just says we're not admitting new patients, and we believe that this is, and we've been working with the Attorney General's office and the department on this, Department of Human Services, and so we do think this is appropriate, and it's designed to provide the best services to the people that have need for these mental health services. The problem is you can't attract psychiatrists, and that is a huge problem, and you need to have a resident psychiatrist.
So you said you're not closing them. What are you doing?
Well, we continue to have significant corrections and other people that are on those campuses. So there's, as you know, there's those that are now multiple use campuses, and both Mount Pleasant and corrections have significant operations there as well. And those facilities will not be closed.
Right, they won't be closed, but the law says mental health institutes, not prisons or juvenile academies.
Well, again, as I said, we've worked with the Department of Human Services and we worked with the Attorney General's office to provide the best service to the people that need it. And we think that's our responsibility, is to meet the mental health needs of the people of Iowa and not necessarily do it the way it was done 100 years ago. You know, when these facilities were built 100 years ago, the philosophy was much different. There were hundreds or thousands of people housed there. That's not the way you provide quality health service, mental health services today.
Do you need to seek a change to Iowa law?
Well, we certainly want to work with the legislature on this. We think this makes sense, and we think that, and this is not an issue that the legislature hasn't reviewed before. They've had studies that have recommended these kind of changes in the past. We think they're overdue, and we think in the best interest of providing the best services under the mental health restructuring that we're going through in Iowa, that this just is part of that continuum of care and the change that's needed. No. What we see is there is an important role for hospitals to play, and then when an individual, you know, sometimes because of the nature of their disease, they need hospitalization, but then there needs to be aftercare available, and that's why community mental health institutes, community mental health facilities have been established, and the University of Iowa also has significant expertise in this area, so we want to work with all of those players to make sure that we're providing the best care and the closest to home possible for the people of the state.
Do
Well, as I said, there's already been at Clarinda, you have the Clarinda Academy, you have the Clarinda Correctional Facility, as well as the services that have been provided there in the mental health area. And the mental health portion of that has shrunk considerably over the years. And the psychiatrist that served that is now retiring. The facility is not accredited. We have two facilities that are accredited. And we think that having a resident psychiatrist and having an accredited facility is important to provide the kind of quality of services.
And is Mount Pleasant also not accredited?
Right.
That's right. Neither one of them are. Clarinda and Mount Pleasant are not accredited.
Is Cherokee and Mount
Pleasant? They are accredited. Well, we didn't hide anything. We put a budget together that was not an easy budget to put together in light of the fact that the cost of Medicaid is going up dramatically. The federal government is giving us more of the obligation and responsibility. I think $47 million of that were paid by the federal government last year that we have to pick up. And so we're looking at what is the best way we can do this, how we can provide the best services, and how can we do this in a way that's going to provide the best quality of services and also do it in an efficient and economical way. And there's other changes we're looking at as well, including managed care. We already do managed care in a couple of areas. One is for women, infants, and children, TANF, and then the other is in the mental health area. And now we're looking at expanding that as well. So. And these are absolutely essential if we're going to be able to control the costs of mental health. And frankly, it's kind of interesting because we have concerns about funding for education. Well, if we don't control these costs, there's not going to be money available to provide the additional needed for our teacher leadership program, additional funding to improve educational achievement in Iowa. Well, this is something that we want to do as we phase into the next fiscal year, and we built this into our budget recommendations to the legislature. And obviously, we'll work with the legislature in the budgeting process to implement it. Well, I just think that we ought to be able to work together on those things, and local school districts and community colleges can. Their schedules are not coordinated today, but I'm a strong supporter of giving students the option of doing dual enrollment so they can get college credit while they're still in high school. And frankly, having uniform starting date for local schools would be really beneficial to that. Well, we're always willing to look at a reasonable compromise, but so far school districts have had the attitude, we get these waivers automatically, we're just going to keep moving up the school start date. Now we're into early August, and it goes unabated. And a lot of families are very upset. It's taking their family vacation away. It's hurting summer jobs for kids. It's hurting municipal swimming pools and other facilities throughout the state. So I think it needs to be resolved. And we're certainly willing to consider a compromise, but it needs to be something that is mutually beneficial, not just one side gets its way all the way.
Governor, I just want to ask about the Saturday's forum. Do you think anybody came out of that forum as the winner in terms of 2016? Do you see anybody being ahead? What's your overall view of how things went?
Well, I think Iowa is the winner. We got national coverage. We had national media come in here. We were in the Sunday shows, and it shows that Iowa caucuses are first in the nation. We have a lot of capable people that are interested in running, and a lot of others that came that are at least testing the waters. So I think it was a good exercise, and this is just the first of many. I know that my friend Bruce Rastetter is putting together an agriculture summit on March 7th, and he's hoping to attract some of the candidates that couldn't come to this one, like Governor Bush and Governor Jindal and others. So,
have you heard any confirmations of any of those candidates?
Well, I had a personal conversation with Governor Bush and with Governor Perry, and they both indicated their intention to come. I also visited with Governor Jindal's chief of staff. Well, he indicated to me he was very interested in coming. I wouldn't say that's a confirmation, but it was a very positive conversation, and he seemed to be very interested.
When
so,
did you talk?
Oh, this was about a week ago.
So what else did you say?
Well, interesting. I did more talking, but I reminded him that you know the way you win in Iowa is to go to all 99 counties, and I reminded him in 1979 and 1980, his mother and father, and he and his two brothers, George W. and Neil, went to all 99 counties. And that's just the way Joni Ernst won the Senate race in Iowa. That's the way Senator Grassley's always won. That's the way Kim Reynolds and I have always won. And so I said, well, you know how what it takes to win in Iowa, and that is you need to come here early in office and go to all 99 counties. And I said, I was a Reagan person in 76, and I was watching what you all were doing, and I was calling John Sears, and he wouldn't return my phone calls. He had the strategy that he was the Reagan campaign manager. We'll just do one rally per congressional district. I think Reagan could have carried the state, but they blew it. The good news was Sears was fired after Iowa, but they didn't announce it till a half hour before the polls closed in New Hampshire, and that's when I knew that Reagan had not lost it. Well, I think he found that pretty interesting, and obviously he has a personal recollection of that. I didn't press him more on that, but I said, you know how it can be done in Iowa, and this is how you do it. And it's and his brother, George W., won the state also. So it's, you know, the key to winning in Iowa is hard work. It's coming here early and offering. It's connecting with Iowans. And I think some of the presenters did a good job of that on Saturday, and we have a strong group of potential candidates, and I'm excited about it, and I'm glad they're coming, and I hope they'll keep coming back again and again.
Did you two talk about being out of politics and jumping back in and being a little bit rusty?
Well, I told him I'd done that, and he knows I've done that, and he did a fundraiser for me, as Governor Perry did, as Governor Jindal did, as Governor Christie did, and for that matter, Governor Walker did for me, and in Iowa as well.
Yeah. What do you think about the talk of Joni Ernst as a possible 2016 VP?
Well, I think that's premature. I think Joni Ernst is off to a great start. She's focusing on representing Iowa. She's already started her tour of all 99 counties this year. And I think she represented our state very well in a response to the President's State of the Union address. And, you know, we're very proud that we've got a woman combat veteran as our United States Senator, and that she'll be a good complement to Senator Grassley.
What did Bush say about the straw poll?
We didn't talk about the straw poll.
His brother came
up with him. That's right. Huckabee was asked the question about the straw poll, and the impression I got that he hasn't decided whether he's going to participate in that or not. It's up to the candidates to decide that, but the Senate committee has decided they want to continue to have the straw poll. I think we all know it's not scientific. It's not necessarily an indication of how Republican voters in Iowa are likely to go in the caucuses, but, you know, I wish the party success in this event, and I will certainly participate in that and many, many others. We just want this to be a great year for Iowa and for the candidates to come here early and often and spend a lot of money and travel the state extensively and meet with people. And most Iowa voters are discerning enough. They're not going to make their decision based on one appearance. They're going to kind of look at and size up the whole field before they make a final decision. I think it's a disadvantage. Those people like, as you know, we had a candidate that that didn't support the RFS and he didn't get elected president, and I'm talking about Senator McCain. I think it's critically important now more than ever because we're at a critical time where the price of corn has dropped well below the cost of production. And I think you can attribute a significant share of that to the loss of demand due to the Environmental Protection Agency not continuing the robust renewable fuel standard. Now, we know there's 43 ethanol plants in Iowa. There's 12 biodiesel plants. There's two or three cellulosic ethanol plant, one already under, a couple of them already in operation, the one in Nevada soon to be open. This is important to the Iowa economy, and the loss of jobs at John Deere, I think, can be attributed to the corn prices being below the cost of production. And consequently, I think it's, and look at the support we've received, bipartisan support in the Iowa legislature. When I asked the legislature last year to pass resolutions supporting the renewable fuel standard, it passed unanimously in both houses. It's not easy to pass anything unanimously in the Iowa legislature, but we did that. And I think that should be a signal to every candidate of either party. This is important to Iowans. It's important to our country. It's important to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. It's important to reduce air pollution. And it's important for jobs and agricultural income. So to say that this is something we believe strongly in is an understatement. Yes, it is important. And I think a candidate that chooses just to ignore it or oppose it does so at their own peril. I've got a bad cold, and so does the lieutenant governor, and we're not alone. And yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
We've had it off and on for some time, a couple of weeks or more.
Okay.